podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Don't Nearly View system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
And welcome to Sports Unplugged on this Friday night, again with me, Gav, and the main man, Kev O'Sullivan. In another week of, here's a sport Gav knows nothing about, but let's have a go at it anyway, because I've decided that I'm going to pick a sport every week, as much as I possibly can, and we'll talk about it. And I know nothing about it, and I'll try to be educated. Last week was NFL, and we had a good chat about that, and we're going to keep an eye on things. We'll skip over it this week. We will get back to it next week and follow it heavily as we get towards the business end of the NFL season. Kev, how are you?
I'm very good. Very good. I'm looking forward to the weekend.
Friday night.
Having a can, as you do.
Yeah, well, I don't tonight for multiple reasons. One, that I have to be back up at 3 a.m. to make my way to Dublin Airport. So if I go on the cans, it won't end well, Kev.
No.
I don't, to be honest with you. But anybody watching, please like, please subscribe, do all that business. You know how it works. Avo's in, Laura Duffy's in, Tom Boland's in, Midnight Toker's in, a few more in there as well. But Kev, the first thing I want to come to is baseball, right? So the World Series is on at the moment.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm going to have a look at baseball. It just popped up during the week on my feed. I don't know how, but it did. And I looked it up, Kev. And we're just discussing before we come on. If you play all your league games, as they would call them, and the maximum amount of playoffs and finals and World Series, you could play, I think it's 186 games in a season.
Give
what? Are they on fucking drugs, Kev?
They were. That was a problem for an awful long time through the 90s.
Oh, yeah, okay, sorry. That's probably the wrong words to be using. No, but you know what I mean?
It was a big problem with steroid use in the major leagues for a long time. And it wasn't until it was exposed mainly through the Lance Armstrong thing with blood doping that a lot of the players got caught. I mean, they went through a stage in the 90s and the early noughties where they were breaking records left, right, and center. There were appearance records, distance records, you know, home run records for seasons and all that. And they were smashing records that had been stood for 30, 40, 50 years. They did have a big problem for a long time, but they have cleaned it up now. But like you said, they're animals with the amount of games they play. I mean, the average baseball game will probably, 3 hours, give or take, three and a half hours. You'll get some days in a season where they'll play doubleheaders. They might say Boston Red Sox might travel to the LA Dodgers and play two games on a Sunday and then fly out of LA to Houston to play the next day. And then fly somewhere else the next day to play Chicago or Detroit. And then they go home and play another 5 or 6 games in 5 or 6 days. It's nuts.
Is there much of an off season in this? Like, Laura Duffy's gone in 2 foot on me early. She said, it's called the regular season, not league games. Laura, bear with me. Regular season. I'll coming around to all this. But is there much of an off season? Because 186 games, right? Are they playing them every day for like
it literally is. Yeah. This is the World Series always. Do you ever see the film Moneyball? You've seen Moneyball, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, the premise is in any baseball film, your season comes alive in October. That's when the business end of the season starts. The World Series will finish in November.
Yeah.
Then they'll be off through till February when they go back to preseason. And they'll all do preseason in Florida and Mexico. And then they'll go back they'll go back into the regular season starting, I think, towards the middle of March, mid to the end of March. And then they do it all again.
It's unbelievable. And I have to be honest with you, I've never sat down and watched a full baseball game. Like, I haven't. Is it like somebody, Red Steve's not having a bar of this. He says it's just rounders, loads of standing around. But like you're hitting the ball and you get from around the bases and get around. Once you get around, that's considered a run.
Considered a run, yeah.
Yeah, and they add it all up as they go along, and there's so many innings and stuff like that.
Nine innings in a game. Two, each side's bat takes it in turn to bat.
Yeah.
If it's tied at the end of nine innings, it goes into extra time, and it's the equivalent of next goal wins. Next run, each side will get two innings at the end, so you'll go in the 10th. If you both score in the 10th, you keep going. Nobody scores, you just keep going.
Right, so I'm going to ask loads of silly questions now.
That's right.
And the people in there, and people are probably coming on here going, they're going to get massive analysis on sport. We will get to that.
We're just two lads who talk an awful lot of balderdash, and sometimes we get it right.
Sometimes we do, and we get better as this hour goes on, I promise.
And for the other times, just check with Laura. Laura knows it all.
I'm here to be educated as well. I'm not here to preach. I'm here to be educated as well. So let me ask a question. The first batter comes in, all right? I hope that's the right terminology. Yeah. And he hits it, and he manages to get the first base. So the next batter has to come in, am I correct?
Yeah.
And when he hits it, the first fella gets around to third, and he gets the second. So you have 2 men out in the field, is that right?
No.
Right.
Say the second guy hits it, and the guy who's on first can keep running until he decides he's not going to stop. He can go to second. If he feels there's an extra base on, he can take the risk, or he could get run out.
The second fella hits it,
he ends up on first base,
and the other fella ends up on
first goes to second.
Yeah, correct. So you could end up with a guy on third, second, and fourth, which are four batsmen standing there, right?
Yeah,
and then he hits a really good one.
He hits
and three of them get home.
Yeah,
three of them get home.
Plus him,
right? Plus him, they could get four. Am I correct?
They could get four runs. Yeah.
Right. Okay. That's. I was just wondering if I was correct on that. I just can't get over how many games they play.
I think it's ferocious when you think about it, that they're like, no, but the pitchers won't pitch the same day, the next day. They'll get 2 or 3 days break between each game. But they might, a major league pitcher will pitch 7 innings in a game.
Yeah.
He'll average around 95 miles an hour per fastball.
Fuck's sake.
And you can imagine the damage that can be done to your shoulder, your arm, over a career. You know, the amount of reconstructive
surgery. Never even a career. Like I play golf. Mm. And there's been days now where I've gone out and I play, you know, 18 holes. And I might come in and So I might go out at 8 in the morning. I might play 18 holes with 3 lads and take about 3.5 hours. So you might be finished at 11:30. You might go and have a bit of breakfast and you might go back out at 1:30, 1, and you might play another 18 holes. You play 36 holes of golf, around 7 hours. You probably, if you're playing well, you probably hit the ball 160 times in that. Now, out of that 160, 60 of them could be putts. So you're not really doing anything. So you're down to 120 actual shots. Yeah. And I tell you, like, your arms, your legs, everything hurts you.
Your hips.
After 36 holes of golf. Now it is.
Everything.
It is. You know, it's probably, I don't know, 10, 12 miles of a walk in that. But Jesus, to be throwing a ball like that, at that speed, that ferocity, like for a 3.5 hour game, no, you're not doing it all the time. But it's very, very physical. Like, and to multiply that by a possible 186 games is, for me, it's just mental.
There's only 9 players on the team, plus you'll have a designated hitter for the American League, whereas the National League don't. The National League expect your pitchers to bat as well, where the American League don't. So the pitchers in the American League, that's their main and only job, is to pitch the ball.
Yeah.
In the National League, they've got to be able to hold a bat as well. And if you're a bit spicy with the ball, then the opposition pitcher will more than likely take liberties with you as well.
Yeah.
you know, pitch into you, pitch in at your shoulder, pitch in at your hands,
yeah,
at your feet, anything just to throw you off, get you out of your game. It's short enough that you can sit and relax and watch it and dip in and out of it and not miss much. It's not as intense as like watching football or anything like that, because football's all action and anything can happen at any second. Baseball is a lot more relaxed. You know, you can chill out and watch. The amount of nights I used to come home from work, throw it on and it'd be on, and I'd just fall asleep on the sofa watching that kind of thing. Like it's that kind of a game, you know?
Yeah. Well, show, I hope I say this right, Laura, because you're being very harsh with me this evening. Shohei Ohtani for the Angels is currently the best player in baseball. He is the only two-way player. He bats every day and pitches every fifth day. He is absolutely unbelievable.
We have to go
and watch some videos of him. Laura Duffy's absolutely banging out facts about baseball here. It's unbelievable.
I mean, you're down to
people,
the business.
And before people get on and go, Laura has to come on the show. We're trying to get Laura on the show. I don't think we can afford her, I'm being honest with you. She might be asking for phenomenal money to come on here, which is fair enough.
Worth every penny, to be fair.
If she's, and the comments are in the go, boy, yeah, she is. But it's anyway, I'd love to know if, before we move on to our next bit, I'd love to know if people in the chat watch a lot of baseball. Do they have a baseball
team? Or have you watched it in the past?
Yeah, because like,
I mean, we've a vague interest because of the Red Sox. So
yes,
because of Fenway Sports and FSG, we have a passing interest in what they do. And they got to the, I think it was the American League final, and it was Houston beat them 5-0.
Yeah.
But Boston weren't expected to get anywhere near it this year. They were.
So it goes in cycles, does it?
It does, yeah.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is because of the way they run their college system is very similar to the NFL.
Okay.
It's on a draft system. So
yeah, so the worst team gets the first draft pick and stuff like that.
And you'll get player trades and what have you. But generally, the run-of-the-mill is the more you pay per player over a season, you tend to have the best teams. New York Yankees, one of the biggest franchises in world sports. Boston Red Sox, one of the most traditional in world sports.
And these players would have, you know, multi-year contracts, I presume.
Yeah.
But then they run out and then that cycle starts again.
Yeah, they're literally the ultimate free agents. Once you're in and you're any good at all, you know, it's not uncommon to see someone who's decent signing $50, $60 million 7-year contracts with a club. You know, there's no such thing as transfer fees. Everything is wages and agents' fees and endorsements, but there is a league minimum that all players have to be paid, and every club has to fall within a structure of, it's like the equivalent of financial fair play.
Yeah, okay.
You know, and it's fairly well governed as well, you know, in that sense. But there are loopholes that they would like closed, things like the endorsements outside of baseball that cross over with sport don't tend to get covered. But they almost always run down their contracts to free agents or get traded in the last year. You know, that's the way they work it.
It's it's just interesting because, you know, like we would have a passing interest in with the Red Sox and stuff like that. And you know, me and you were talking about NFL last week and watching it, kind of watching it on and off. But then when it comes around to the playoffs and stuff, you kind of get more involved.
You get more into it again,
On a Sunday night. And I just wanted to see what people thought of baseball. People are saying, there was one person there said it feels LFC Aaron says Major League Baseball is actually dying sport in America. NBA and NFL much bigger.
It's where the MLS are looking to get a foothold in the TV audience is because for most baseball grounds in the regular season, you could just walk up on the day and buy tickets. You very rarely see a full ground unless it's Boston, New York, you know, LA, the Angels and the Dodgers, Chicago White Sox, Detroit, I think it's Detroit Tigers. You know, unless there's a rivalry or something on it, you could pretty much walk up to any stadium on any given day during the regular season and just walk in and just pay on the day kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think MLS it's gone past the stage now where it's a flash in the pan type of thing. MLS over there now has got a decent foothold. It's not quite up there with National Hockey League, but it's not trying to compete with the NHL and it's not trying to compete at the same time as baseball, but there is a window there for MLS to grow. And yeah. baseball, because of volume more than anything, and because of choice, it is starting to slip and starting to wane. Yeah, and you, well, more, nothing more so than the Olympics when Japan won the gold medal at the Olympics and not America.
Yeah, and like, if it was me, like, I'm a football fan, you know, if I went to America, I'd be looking out for football and is there games on? If you're in New York, is there any games on? Or say for instance, New York, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, but me coming into that cold, you know, I'd look and go, these fuckers are playing every day of the week. And there's an MLS game on once a week. Should I go to the MLS today? You know, I pick the MLS because I've fucking 6 other days a week I watch these.
Yeah, exactly.
You
know what I mean? Yeah.
And that's where you might lose some people, but it's
It'll always have its core support, yeah. especially at this time of year. I mean, you turn it on tonight. It's on at 1 a.m. tonight on BT Sport.
Yeah.
The World Series is tied 1-1. Mm-hmm. Houston and Atlanta Braves, neither side have won it in a long, long time. Houston has only ever won it once in their history.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, it is a bit of a fairy tale for either side. Last time Atlanta won it was when they held the Olympics. I think it was 96. So for either city, it's huge because they're both established cities that they haven't had franchise picked up and moved somewhere else a lot.
Yeah.
You know, the Atlanta Braves and the Houston Astros have been in that city for a long, long time. So their core support there is going to be massive.
Yeah.
So it's huge for them.
Yeah, it was just interesting when I seen that earlier. I mean, you were talking and I said, you know what? Let's have this. Red Steve says he needs an early night. It's a big day tomorrow. It is a big game.
There is
Liverpool tomorrow.
It's not on tomorrow.
Bonkers LFC says F1 race last week. Yeah, I caught a bit of it and he's gone 12 points clear, am I right?
He's gone 12 points clear now. He won that race by 1.5 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it was decided literally by when Hamilton took his pit stop.
Yeah,
if he'd have stopped a lap earlier, he might have had a better chance. But it was so close. The cars are so close now.
Yeah,
that it's fine margins. But it was a good race all the way through, all the way down the field. There was good passing. There was good race action all the way through. There was no real drama. But no, it was a decent race. The next one's in Mexico, I think, next weekend. So that's another
there's
one.
Five to go now, is there?
Yeah, five to go. That Mexico is a huge race.
Hamilton probably needs to win the next two, doesn't he?
He needs to win, definitely. At least the next one to bring it back within. But it's still hair's breadth, but Hamilton can't afford to slip further behind.
Yeah,
he has to get back to winning now. But I thought it was a cracking race, to be fair.
Yeah, no, it was, and 1.5 seconds is nothing in it. You know,
that's what I mean. It is nothing. It is literally the length of, or the decision on when to bring Hamilton in was kind of, you know.
Avo loved it. He said it was a great race. I missed 48 laps, and I seen the closing six. So
you saw the business end, Avo.
Yeah, it was one of those. But just moving on. To another thing, MMA. Now again, this has come up because there's a card in Abu Dhabi this weekend, and then there's a card in New York next
big
weekend.
Card. Big
UFC 267 and 268, isn't that right?
Yeah.
Talk to me, Kev. What's the watch in this? Because I won't see it tomorrow. I'll be too busy doing other stuff. But next week, I might take a look at it next week. You know,
well, next week is huge. Someone in the chat will have to remind me of how to pronounce the guy or spell the guy's name who's in, but it's Kobe Covington is the challenger to, I think it's a middleweight title, and he lost last time. It went 5 rounds, and it was a very, very good fight. And Covington is one of those characters. He's, love him or hate him, he's a pure Trump supporter, and he plays on it.
Okay.
And he's, as Francis Ngannou, I think he's coming up. It might be against or something like that. But it's an absolute belter of a fight next week. It's a stacked card as well. But the one this weekend in Abu Dhabi will be massive for TV because it's free to air in America. Yeah. And Blachowicz against Grosvenor Teixeira for the light heavyweight title. and Peter Yan is fighting for the bantamweight interim title on a co-main event. And it's on at a decent time for us. I think it's on about 6 p.m. The main cards will be, the main fights will be on about 6 p.m. over here on BT Sports. So it's two decent fights. Look, if you, there's not going to be much else on apart from Spurs Man United. So if that's boring, which is quite possibly could be, yeah, flick it over and give it a go.
Yeah. No, I wanted to touch on the MMA. I wanted to see what people thought of it.
Next week is going to be an absolute barnstormer. It's going to be huge. It's up there with the McGregor type of hype that it will get, especially in America. This is an absolute, possibly one of the fights of the year next weekend.
Well, it's one to look forward to this tomorrow and next week in New York. Usman v. Covington.
That's it.
Says Olivia. There you go. Just to clear it up. And Veranda Cheese says there's an Irish girl fighting Chris Cyborg in November and Bellator.
Ooh, so that'd be tasty. Cyborg has been around for a while. She is serious.
Yeah, so Luke.
That's a test.
Luke Jackson says Covington plays the heel character. He was about to get released from UFC unless he changed his approach. Has worked well for him.
Oh yeah.
So
when you get a U.S. president, a serving U.S. president at the time, Donald Trump, turning up to your fights.
Yeah.
It plays well. It goes well for you. UFC definitely made the most of that.
It does. Now, a couple of football things I want to get on to. We are going to get on to Premier League. We're going to look at a couple of fixtures and a couple of bits that's gone on during the week. But I want to talk Barcelona with you, Kev. They lost last weekend. I think was that last weekend or during the week? 1-0 away. Midweek, wasn't it?
Midweek against Osasuna, wasn't it?
I thought it was Rayo Vallecano.
Could have been Vallecano.
1-0, they lose. And Jorgen fucking Ronald.
So let's just Ronald, who's on the cans here?
No. Ronald Koeman gets the sack. And I was asking lads for a couple of weeks about, you know, why is he still in that job? You know, are they that desperate? Because nothing for me stands out about Ronald Koeman as a manager. I'm just going to put it out there, right? I think the job is way too big for him. Even if they were in that pump, I think it's too big for him. The state they're in now, I think, is way too big for him. I don't think he has the mentality to do it. And this is interesting. Stu Mack says, Gav, Jack Colback. Is he the Jack Colback?
Jack Colback is Sunderland.
Forrest?
It could be Forrest, yeah.
Okay. He says, has got my 23-fold bet for $43,000 down to a 9-fold. Okay, so something's happened tonight. Jack Colback must have scored a goal. And Stu Mack
Forrest waiting on. Forrest were playing QPR tonight, so.
Right, so he's waiting on the 9 more teams.
$43,000.
Stick it in there and we'll all take a note of that.
We'll all keep an eye on it.
But Barcelona, they're in the shit. That they're gonna post massive losses. The only way over for me is that they get huge investment. There's being talk from Dubai that they will get some investment there, right? Which I don't know how that will work because aren't they a fan owned fucking enterprise? And you know, will that throw everything up in the mix? Because someone coming in with investment is gonna want a fucking massive say in that club. If they do it. But you look at Koeman and he gets sacked and there's talk of Xavi coming in now to replace him, another former player and stuff like that. But, Kev, I like Xavi as a player, don't get me wrong. But is he a bit mad going for that job right now in the stage of his career he's in? Because I think you need someone with a bit more of an appetite for the game than Ronald Koeman, a little bit more of a presence. Because I don't think Ronald Koeman has much presence, to be honest. No. And somebody that's going to go in and look at that team and go, we've lost the best players ever played for the club. We've lost players in the last 18 months to 2 years that were huge for the club. We have players still here that are coming towards the back end of their career. And we've some cracking talents coming through in the likes of Pedri, etc. Is Xavi mad doing this, Kev? Because this is a road to nowhere for me.
I think it's win-win for him. If he succeeds, he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. If he doesn't, well, the club was a shambles and he never got the backing. And he tried, and when the club called, he came. I don't think there's a lose for him unless he goes in and tries to up upshift everything, and I don't think he will. I think for him, look, I think Barcelona fans, first and foremost, need to realise that odds are they're not going to make top four this year. They're not good enough. They're not good enough to make the top four in that Spanish league now. If they accept that and decide, right, he's going to need time to rebuild. He's got to shift players there that need to be gone, the likes of Clément Longley, and there's another centre-back there as well, and Titi. These people who have to be removed from the club now, because they've obviously decided they're not going to take pay cuts. So by hook or by crook, they have to get them out. And he's gonna have to persevere with what he has. And at least the one thing that he has going for him is he'll be very stubborn and set in how he wants to play the game. Mm-hmm. Rightly or wrongly, he'll get them playing the way he played. Now they won't be as good as him, and they might not be able to do it the way they used to do it, but that will buy him credit in the bank for a certain period of time. I mean, I think that most fans, Barcelona fans, aren't stupid. They can see what's in front of them. They know that Sergio Aguero was a vanity signing that shouldn't have been made. They know that Depay is decent, but that's about it. And they know that the kids are learning their trade on the job. So they have no choice but to be patient now.
Does he go to... Because Xavi is like a pure product of La Masia in Barcelona, right? Does he take the job on the understanding that, listen, if I want all of these top names to go, they go. And we have to take our medicine here, and we have to say to ourselves, right, look, I think they're in real danger missing out on the Champions League. I think that's a fair thing to say, right?
Yeah.
But I think they're assuming for Xavi. And the reason I say it is because I know that they're messed up at Barcelona. But if Xavi comes in there and it's a complete disaster, people could hold it against him. Look, you went in there, it was still Barcelona. They still had a certain standard of player. Conditions were tough and you weren't able to hack it. And people could throw that at him because you've seen it being thrown at loads of managers in the past, right? But what does Xavi do? Does Xavi come in and say, right, A, B, C, D, and E aren't good enough, so they're gone. But D, E, F are, you know, they haven't got the right attitude anymore. They're gone. You know, and G and H, you know, I just need them off the wage bill, wherever it might be. Does he need to literally look at the likes of Fati and Pedri and whoever else and say, right, I'm building my team around these. We're going to have to take our medicine for a year or two. But in a year or two time, I'm going to bring in a couple with the right attitude at the right age. And we're going to progress this team that in 2 years time, they're ready to stand up and challenge again on whatever. What level that might be, and be of the right mindset, and in the same time, bringing down a wage bill and bringing down these fucking crazy contracts that he had. It's a double-edged sword. What he could do, but at the same time, if he tries to do, I think that's his best route out. Because if he tries to do that and it doesn't go right, you go, well, at least he tried something different. At least he tried it for the good of the club and to try to progress the club rather than throwing another load of money at it, which they might not have.
Get
caught with a load of players that just don't deal for them because they're only in it for themselves.
Yeah, I think that has to be the way. It's, I mean, you credit where it's due to Real Madrid. They saw what was coming 2-3 years ago when they started signing the likes of Vinicius and they're signing the Ferland Mendes of this world and Eder Militao's. You know, they were picking these players up and blending them into their squad so that when the time came for Sergio Ramos to be shifted on, they were, and your man at United, they were able to do it in a way that it didn't affect them too much. They're not the Real Madrid of old, but they're not as bad as what people would like to think. Barcelona either couldn't see what was around the corner. They never thought Messi would up sticks and leaves. And they built their future planning around the fact that Messi would still be at the club until he was 36, 7, 8.
Yeah.
You know, they never thought that they could ever be in a situation where they could lose him. Factor that into how unstable the club is financially. It's crazy what's happened there. Now, the ownership side of it is interesting because if Xavi takes it over, you'd almost certainly see maybe Qatari investment coming in. But you're right, they will definitely want a big say and probably will want that 50+1 model removed.
Yeah. Well,
and the Barcelona fans are going to have to decide that.
Yeah, well, Ferrando Chiz did say that he thinks only the fans' decisions, the only decision the fan makes is basically who the president is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But having said that, if Qatar, Dubai, whatever comes in and they put in £1 billion, right?
And that's what you're going to be talking.
Yeah, £1 billion to clear the debt and be able then to, you know, basically go and rebuild a squad. Yeah. They're going to want their man to be the fucking president. They're not going to want one Laporta being president. You know what I mean? They're not going to want...
They actually might leave Laporta there. But yeah, will want is a majority stake.
Yeah, but even if they don't get a majority stake, they won't want somebody... You see, they won't want to put a load of money in, say Laporta stays, just for argument's sake, to keep Laporta there. And then they put one of their own guys up for presidency. And it's bashed down. And then Laporta turns and says, well, I don't think we should do this. I want to be president next time because of this. And he goes against the people that are trying to save the club, if you know what I mean, for his own own well-being. It's a very messy situation. But I just
they're not silly. They'll cover their bases and they'll make sure that no matter what happens, that their holding within the club is going to be sacrosanct. I mean, I like the idea of this 50+1 model, but in reality, it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist in Munich. It doesn't exist in Barcelona. It's a nonsense. And anyone who thinks it is that Bayern Munich is fan power, it's just not. The Barcelona board run that club. The fans get a say. It might be a vocal say. Like at the moment, they're on about they want the sponsorship deal torn up or ended as soon as possible with one of their Middle Eastern sponsorship. But in reality, Bayern are doing that from a position in a league where they're the only show in town.
Yeah.
If Barcelona were doing that, that's why they hate Leipzig so much. That's why every club in Germany hates Leipzig so much.
Yeah.
You know, they hate the idea of a company or someone coming in and owning a club and investing in a club for a city to win something. You know, it should be fan business. I'm sorry, not in this modern age. It just does not in an age where you've seen it. We'll go on to it in a minute with West Ham, where you've got billionaire owners willing to put enough money into the club to sustain your club for a generation in place, they're going to want a big say. And
of course,
that's the way the football's going, I'm afraid.
Well, if they carry on the way they're carrying on, the least of their worries will be not being in the Champions League. Everything, it'll be Europa League then it'll be, you won't have European football, and then you won't want players wanting to play for you, you know. And you see all this stuff about Pedri and Fati and there's others there that apparently have big contracts, but big massive buyouts, and that's a legal thing in Spain. Yeah. But I'm sure somewhere in their contract that says, "Listen, that's the buyout, right? Legally, if anyone wants to come in and absolutely destroy you with a bid, but if I'm not in the Champions League, there should be a number on it, and if I'm not in the Europa League, there most certainly should be a number on it."
Because and if it doesn't matter, their agents need firing on the spot.
Yeah, exactly. Because these players, as young as they are, and they might be, you know, products of the Barcelona youth system, or you know, always wanted to play for Barcelona. You hear that line all the time. Mm-hmm. They're all looking out for themselves. You see it all the time. You know, young players, 17, 18, 19 years of age, and they all have these mega agents, and they hold all the power now, and they always will hold that power until something massively, massively changes. But
it's funny enough, you say that. In the week, there was an interview, I think it was Chiellini, talking about De Ligt.
Yeah.
That he was an absolute superstar of a defender, a man mountain, and he just hopes to God that Raiola leaves him stay where he is for another few years.
Yeah.
I mean, that tells you everything you need to know about football today.
Yeah, this isn't about football. He hopes that
Raiola keeps him there.
Yeah, because the agent will tell you where you're going.
Yeah, that's
That's Paulie says there, it could test Xavi. So I presume he's talking about Xavi here. He says it could test his patience working with players who are not at his level. It'd be interesting. Yeah, but I know where you're coming from with that when it comes to kind of more experienced player that weren't at his level. But I think if he was looking at younger players, Paulie, that you feel that could get to a level, I think that would work better for Xavi. You know,
you see that more with the likes of Sol Campbell going to work in the lower leagues. You know, the likes of Paul Ince when he was working in League One and League Two, that he was asking players to do things where he thought was basic. Same with Sol Campbell. And players were just looking at him four-eyed as to say, what in the hell are you talking about? Mm. You know, Xavi's coming into Barcelona with players who grown up through the academy system, know the club inside out, know because that's the one thing with Barcelona.
We're probably showing videos of Xavi every day as well.
Yeah, and it's one thing with Klopp with Liverpool. From under-18s upwards, they all play the same style. They all play the same way. It's not under-18s are tailored to how a player wants to play. They're tailored to how the first team plays. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it should be. And that's what these Barcelona kids were raised on. They were raised on Xavi, Iniesta, and Busquets, you know, and that's how you play and go and mirror it. Mm. Now, these kids are going to get a huge lift if he comes in. It's the fact that you're trying to blood these kids into a side without the experience around them. That's where, unlike Manchester United in 1992, those kids were coming in to a winning side with experienced pros around them.
Yeah.
On the cusp of doing something.
Yeah.
These kids are coming into a failing side with brand new signings and managers who are coming and going. It could all end up badly. It really could go.
And Midnight Talker says Xavi is non-proven too, and that's fair.
Yeah.
But the thing about Xavi is he's an absolute one of the all-time legends at Barcelona. He's up there probably, I don't know where people would rank him in all-time Barcelona players, but he's most definitely in the top 10, if not the top 5. And, you know, it all depends on his outlook, and it all depends what Barcelona are looking for. You know, are Barcelona looking for Xavi to come in and just be this, like, oh, Xavi's back, and he was brilliant on the pitch, and he must be brilliant off, and we expect to be up there, or do they turn around and go, Xavi, we're in a bad way, you know, we have got the basis of a really good core of young players. We have some players there that are okay, but probably need a kick up the arse. We've some that just don't need to be here. And if he knows what the clear prerogative is on this club, I think he could do all right. The only worry for me is that he goes in and he's spun a yarn, Kev. You know the way goalposts can be changed. And that'd be my worry for him. And then people would say, you know, would Xavi fucking had a hard time? And it can go against you. I'm not saying it would, but it can go against you.
One thing that could go against him is the last time they went for a player like this, a player to manage them like this, was Luis Enrique and Pep Guardiola.
Yeah.
You know, and if they're expecting Xavi to be a clone of them and to eclipse what they've done in the game, they could be in for a rude awakening, because they did it with top quality individuals already there.
They had established. They had brilliant squads, in fairness to them.
Yeah.
So you mentioned West Ham.
Mm.
And there's been talks this week of a takeover at West Ham, or a takeover bid at West Ham. A billionaire.
Daniel Kisniak or something?
Yeah.
Something like that. I can't
remember. What do you make of this? Because this comes hot on the heels of the Newcastle stuff. Now, the Newcastle stuff held a lot of...
got a lot of more baggage.
Yeah, there's a lot more baggage with that one, you're right. You know, with different things going on. But this West Ham one, you know, we're only talking... I don't know whether we were talking on a show or we were talking, it must have been on a show, and we were saying, you know, Gold and them two Muppets and the other one, Brady, have kind of disappeared into the background at West Ham. And it's probably been a really good thing for them, because every week you will be seeing stuff from them three more than you would be seeing stuff from West Ham. Or you'd know more about them than you would the West Ham result week in, week out. And they've kind of disappeared in the background. And, you know, people are saying, well, you know, West Ham fans not on the ground is a good thing for West Ham. How would they do this season with fans in? But they've a good thing going on there at the moment. Yeah, you know, they knocked City out of the League Cup during the week. They've a really, their manager's doing very well. They've a really settled, solid enough squad. That might be a bit short come the back end of the season, but at the moment they're doing all right. Gold, Sullivan and Brady, thanks bonkers. I just couldn't remember the other fella's name. Chris Black is saying they want a 24% stake in the club initially. Yeah. So would this be a case for you of coming in 24%, gives them extra few quid to spend, sorts out the COVID issues that they might have had over money, clears that up, gets them onto a next level where they can spend some money, and then this crowd will look and go, we're progressing, we want another 24%, or we want whatever, and eventually where they end up being a majority holder over the other three that are in charge right now.
Yeah, I think the way it works, they'll come to a certain percentage where they'll have to buy the club out. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what that is, but I know that there's they have to get to it. Because remember Usmanov, when he wanted to take over Arsenal, and he was trying to buy up shares left, right, and centre, and he had to get to a threshold before the others had no choice but to sell. Yeah. I mean, with this investment now, I mean, they're expanding the ground to an extra 2,500 seats. Now, it's not a lot. But anything, where
it's interesting.
I don't know.
Where are they making that expansion of 2,500? Like,
I have no clue, because I can't imagine they're demolishing or building anything extra. Whether they're adding more removing some hospitality that's there, and adding seating or something like that, I don't know. But I mean, the Spurs are
isn't it a fairly like you know,
it's a weird number.
The stadium is a mirror image of itself. You know, is one end different to the other? Where they can go, look, that's slightly smaller at that end. We make it bigger and we match it up. Is it like that?
Well, remember from the Olympics, they turned the pitch 90 degrees.
Yeah, but it's a bit like the Etihad. The Etihad,
because
City of Manchester looked completely fucking different to what it is now.
Yeah,
you know, but it's just a weird number of 2,500.
I think one of the comments in there is not a bad shout at all. Building it closer to the pitch. I think it was Toker's comment there that they might do something, whether they go down and build seating up in some way, shape, or form, take the pitch lower,
right,
and build seats.
But would that rule out your running track then?
Yeah, eventually, that's what I would have done anyway.
Okay.
I would have dug up the pitch completely, took it maybe 20 foot, 30 foot lower, and built stands up so that your ground tier now would become like your second tier. Do you know what I mean? And you'd have stands all the way around where the running track is.
Yeah. Well, Danny,
you know, it's just crazy.
Danny Bramman, I don't know if he's a West Ham fan, but he says, we already have the seats in place. There are 67,000 seats. We are limited to 60,000. Is that in that stadium? You know,
Olympic Stadium was bigger, wasn't it? Because they had to reduce capacity.
Yeah. When they turned the pitch.
Yeah, I'd like to know about that as well. And I know they had to turn the pitch. And the Olympic Stadium had a bigger capacity than what West Ham do. But that was maybe during the Olympics, they had retractable seats or something.
Yeah. It's a weird one. But
I mean, the investment itself, the guy is this isn't his first foray into football. He's a large shareholder in Sparta. I think it's Sparta Prague.
Yeah, 40%, somebody said.
Yeah, and you know, West Ham already have the two Czech players there. So you wonder how long this has been brewing. I don't think this happened overnight. The idea that West Ham suddenly became aware of Czech players and they landed like the two best ones.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't think this is something that's been brewing for a while. And good luck to them, because in fairness, the way they're going this season, to me, they're a top four side this season. If they can maintain it, unlike what Leicester did, is fall away in the last third of the season because of the demands of Europe. You know, it's all rosy in the park now and they're playing great stuff, but it's a long, long season. And usually by the last third of the season, the sides tend to fall away.
Yeah, February, March is when you usually see it. And then it really starts to, it takes shape. I think it starts to really take shape around the end of December, because you've gone through that Christmas period.
But all credit to Moyes. He's done a cracking job with that main core of 11, probably 14 players, 15 players. He's got them playing good, effective football.
Yeah. Danny's back. Thanks for this, Danny.
Cheers, Dan.
He says, we only have a safety certificate for 60,000. For us to get the seats opened, we have to get an agreement from the, it must be the council.
London, yeah.
Is that the London council? You'll have to tell me what LLDC stands for, but I'm presuming it's a council. And, you know, that's fair enough. With regards to West Ham, I said it the other night, David Moyes, he's settled in there now. He has been playing a certain way. It just reminds me of Everton, the mid-2000s, mm-hmm. with a few better players for me. And maybe a little bit of a deeper squad. But like, West Ham have everything to go and be competitive, be really competitive.
Do,
like,
yeah.
like that stadium is being thrown at them a lot, but it's a fabulous stadium.
It is,
and
yeah.
if you can find some way of getting that fucking running track out of there and bringing that, you know, I'll put it this way: if you took that running track out and just brought both ends of that pitch stadium up towards the pitch, it'd be fucking it'd be a cauldron in there.
It would be,
and,
yeah.
And then if there's talk of this crowd coming in, or this guy coming in with this money and the chance of getting the other three out, that's only a plus. It's only a plus. You know what I mean?
Look, in fairness, two of them are billionaires, but they're billionaires on paper.
Mm.
They're this guy, he owns 5% of Royal Mail. He owns a part of Sainsbury's.
Mm-hmm.
He owns a large, he's a CEO of a Central European gas company. You know, he will model West Ham very much along what Leipzig are doing, you know, where they will buy right, sell right, and be competitive while they're doing it. And if they can get into push towards the Champions League while they're trying to get there,
yeah,
all the better again.
Okay. You know? The London Legacy Development Corporation, and thanks for that, Cyber Sims, is the mayor
post-Olympic
of London Games Development Corporation. But it'll be interesting to see. Because, like I said, that stadium and moving away from Upton Park was thrown at them a lot, and they didn't settle for it in there right. But in saying that, when they weren't settling right, you know, who was in charge, you know, players, it just wasn't going right for them. Nothing felt right. And I think the break has kind of made West Ham fans think, well, this place is better than not being at it. And they're making the absolute best of it. And if West Ham can find a way to get them more involved and make it feel more like home, I think it's a huge thing.
And more then, so, an investor like him, West Ham might be able to afford to keep the likes of Bowen and Declan Rice.
Yeah, hang on to them for that bit longer.
Hang on to them.
Yeah,
and build around them.
Exactly, and get the extra year or 2 years out of them, and then they may have to, move on then. But if West Ham can continue to progress, they become a lot more of attractive opposition or proposition than some of the sides around them. Where you go, why would he go there? Why would he leave West Ham to go to whoever, you know, player insert team A? Let me see. Avo says the video of the Anfield Road development looks a beast. Either of you. It's going to be impressive looking. I think when it's finished, to see it matched up with the main stand will look good. Right, 10 minutes or so left, Kev. We're going to stick on football because we've done baseball and we've done MMA. And I'm not talking golf this week. I will let you know, I went out and played golf yesterday morning and the fucking rain was horrendous. I had to travel out to the coast of Dublin and play on the side of a hill in order to find a golf course that was open. There was that much rain in Dublin yesterday. Just played 9 holes, got absolutely pissed on. But I had a great time doing it.
On his sheets down here all day today.
People looking at you coming off the course going, what the fuck are you doing out there? And I'm just looking on, it's great. Once the ball rolls and once it goes, we're good. You know what I mean? You get wet for an hour and a half, 2 hours playing 9 holes. Come in, get some dry clothes in you, get some food into you, and it's all good. Let me see. Gav, Chris Brack wants to know, Gav, are you trying to get Andy in the worst bar in Liverpool on Saturday? No. I don't know what bars we're going into. There's a load of people asking, are we going for a point? Where he's going for a point? Listen, I'll be in Liverpool at 8 o'clock in the morning. Contact me then and we'll let you know where we are. I'm not going to make a big plan around it because I'm brutal for them. And I could be in one pub and I'd say, yeah, I'm meant to be meeting all these fellas up in this pub. And I don't go because I'm enjoying myself in the pub I'm in. And just the way I am. Gav's last can. Why are people making all these names up now? There's loads of them. 8 over, Gav, for 9. No, 4 over for 9. Thanks very much. Or 5 over. Sorry, 5 over for 9, which was really good because the ball was going nowhere in that weather yesterday. It's the difference in a golf ball and the distance it travels in good weather and bad weather is just absolutely phenomenal. So, no, it wasn't 8 over, you cheeky fuck. So, the weekend, and I just want to finish on one thing. Let me see. What's this? Oh, yes. Paulie Wanless says, by the way, Gav, I got stuck into a heap of Bolton Bangers videos since you mentioned it. Very enjoyable. This is, of course, the YouTube channel called Golf Mates.
All right. It's
basically lads playing golf, having a good time. They've actually progressed it into a huge channel, but I think it's about 160,000 subscribers now. They play golf all over the place. They're mates. They've different challenges. They've different games. They play against each other. And it's a really good laugh. And go and check it out because it's my favorite. It's my absolute favorite golf YouTube channel out there at the moment. And Jesus, Gav's last cancer, just asking, hon. Yeah, sorry, I was a bit harsh on you there, but I'm being honest. But Ole Gunnar Solskjær, it was bad for him on Sunday, but some of the stuff he's come out with this in the last couple of days has been horrendous. He's liking
it's like the definition of nothing to see here.
Oh my god, he's come out and basically liking the defeat to Liverpool as like Tyson Fury getting knocked down. He's basically told us that he's seen Sir Alex Ferguson because Alex Ferguson was having meetings with Cristiano Ronaldo. I'm amazed he's still in the job, Kev. Amazed.
I am as well. I think I said after that, I thought he'd be gone, if not that night, because the way Man United work is weird, because it is the way the stock exchange rules are. They have to be very careful about what time of day they release information for anything, whether it's to do with signings, sackings, major decisions, anything like that. I was fully expecting to wake up the next morning to something that he was gone.
Yeah.
The fact that Alex Ferguson is going to bat for him again, I would be so embarrassed. The fact that, no offense, like, Fergie is an absolute genius football manager, one of the greats of all time, if not arguably the greatest club manager the England has ever seen. The fact that he still has influence after so many years.
He's rocking up the Old Trafford on the Monday morning.
It's shocking, like, it's absolutely shocking. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't know what Solskjær is. He's not a manager. He's not a coach. Harry Maguire was put up to do that interview, and it was literally stand in front of a camera, say all the PR things that you're supposed to say. It was the most vanilla interview I've ever seen in my life. Yes, we're embarrassed. Yes, we're sorry. Yes, we're going to work really, really hard. Are you now? If I was a Man United fan watching that, I remember when it got bad for Brendan, and that night at Anfield that he went. I mean, we knew that he should have gone in the summer. We all said he was on thin ice from the summer. But that night that he went, that decision was made that night. And you could see that it was coming. I don't for the life of me understand what... If you're a Manchester United player and you can't get yourself motivated to play Liverpool at home in front of a packed house for the first time in years... They're lucky that they're playing Spurs this weekend. They're really lucky they're playing Spurs this weekend because for how bad Manchester United are, Spurs are worse.
I think it's an intriguing one.
It could go anyway.
The only thing that had me thinking that he wouldn't be sacked, I'm still amazed that he hasn't, but the only thing, the reason I thought he might be sacked was maybe another Manchester United manager sacked after Liverpool defeat. All right. I'm nearly sure Moyes is let go after Liverpool defeat.
Mourinho would
have been the third in four. Yeah. And I think that's what might have held them off. The other thing that tells you is that they haven't got any plan for after Ole Gunnar Solskjær. And disregard everything you see from journalists in fucking the UK, Italy, France, Germany, Spain, wherever it is, because they haven't a fucking breeze what's going on, right? I'm not messing when I say there has to be 15 managers linked with this job.
Yeah.
Right. And he's ready to take over. And Manchester United like him, and Manchester United like him, and Manchester United can't like them all. If Manchester United like all them players, and they've are all them managers, and they're going and going, we like him, him, and him. They haven't got a plan.
Yeah, notion.
Yeah, because you need to have a fella you want.
And it's not just the manager. It really isn't.
It's the backroom staff that comes with the manager. It's everything that comes around. It's the logistics of the company the company you're trying to run and the football club you're trying to run. And for me, Kev, they don't have a plan. And all this talk of, oh, well, Conte wants to come in and Conte's ready to take over, but you know you don't want to burn Conte with these three games. Are you telling me Conte's not good enough? You're basically telling me that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is not good enough, A, but B, Conte couldn't come in and improve them enough to get a result that Spurs, Atalanta are home to Man City. Yeah, so when are you going to bring him in? Are you going to just wait until he's run a three games against Norwich at home, three weekends in a row, and then bring him in? That doesn't show much trust in him. But it's
a shambles.
It's an absolute shambles. And the stuff he's coming out with, like that, like trying more and trying. Nothing about, he didn't say anything about his tactics. He didn't say about how he got it wrong. I haven't seen anything from him to say, my fault, right? But I haven't seen him come out and say, my players weren't good enough, and lash the players. And I know all this, they like to protect the players and stuff like that. But
sometimes you can't.
Sometimes you have to just turn around and go, that wasn't good enough from start to finish from any of my players. And I won't allow it to happen again. He's so fucking soft. And, you know, I said it before, and I've seen Brendan Rodgers' name, you know, being mentioned. Right?
And they won't go anywhere near that job.
Well, I don't know. And I'll tell you why, because I think they want a yes man. And the reason they want a yes man to continue on exactly the way they're going. And this is where the Glazers point comes in. And I fully agree with United fans on this with regards to the Glazers, because they could push them on and on and on, but they don't, because they've their own agenda. And the final shot of the agenda is selling them for billions. And I'm walking away with that.
The thing is, if they had any common sense, if they actually wanted to compete and win things, the first thing they'd do is they'd go out and hire Edwin van der Sar as your director of football. And then you tell him to go and you set the agenda and how you want the club to play, how you want the club to run over the next 5 years. Then you go out and you hire the manager, and then you look at the players and look at what you need and go from there. It doesn't matter who the manager is. It doesn't matter who the coaches are. If you've got a guy in charge of bringing in players who isn't setting the agenda of how to buy players and how to organize a squad and build a squad, they're miles off it.
Yeah, there's a real disconnect for me with whoever's in charge of Manchester United and whoever's running the club. There's nothing in between. And in fairness,
commercially, they're Neville, still a massive success.
Huge, because they've put the groundwork in over 25 to 30 years. But Neville says an awful lot, and he has said that a couple of times. And that's one thing I do agree with him on, right? But having said that, while there is that disconnect, there's a reason for that disconnect.
Yeah.
There's a reason, because there's no disconcerting voices in the middle that might back your manager if your manager ever pipes up. And that's why that person's there. Gav's last can says 100% Brendan goes there, his head is that big. I agree with you. And I think it suits him. I think Brendan Rodgers would love nothing more than go to Manchester United. Don't forget all the Liverpool toys and all that.
I think he wants City as well.
But I'd argue, right, United would want him because I think he'd just go along, he'd go with the flow, he'd just be happy to be there for me, Brendan Rodgers, right? I don't see how Brendan Rodgers is in any way in a race or in any way being considered to be the Man City boss. Can't understand it. I cannot understand how he is. I really can't. And mainly because, okay, he spends a fair bit of money at Leicester, but they do lose their best player usually every summer. I think this summer might have been the only summer in the last five that they haven't. But in Europe, he's horrendous.
He is.
And Man City's main goal right now over everything else is European football, right? And winning the Champions League. Now, if Pep Guardiola goes this season and possibly next and doesn't win the Champions League and walks away from Manchester City, Brendan Rodgers is the last man you want to put in there, because he is horrendous in European football. Horrendous. Like, even Europa League, he's horrendous. They get away with one during the week. Maybe not during the week, last week.
Last week in Europe.
Yeah, and I've seen him do it at Liverpool. You've seen him do it at Celtic. You've seen him do it at Leicester. And he'll do it again wherever he goes. But listen, Brendan Rodgers gets linked to every job. Spurs, Arsenal, he's been linked to both of them. Sure, didn't he come out at one stage and nearly told Arsenal he wanted to go there? But anyway,
he literally just stopped short of saying it.
Yeah. How do you see this going at the weekend? Because If United win, can they sack him? If they draw, same as. And if he loses, so surely what? They can't. They can't keep him on.
No. Well, I think I had it down as 2-1. I think Spurs beat him 2-1. Okay. If Spurs can manage to score 2 goals.
Okay.
But I think an awful lot of it's going to depend on the manner of the defeat. If they turn up and they play and they lose, they'll be fine. He'll be fine. If they get walloped out of it, and I stand by what I said about Spurs over the past few weeks, they're a bad side.
Yeah.
If they get walloped out of it by Spurs, and that Spurs midfield is capable of getting through them, then I don't know how he stays in the job. And this is a crucial week for them. This is a massive week for them.
The only thing I would say is that I think Spurs might play into their hands. Not even overplay it. I think if you look at Arsenal against Spurs, Arsenal handily beat them 3-1, right?
Yeah.
And Arsenal didn't play a huge amount of football for me. Didn't play a huge amount of football. What they done was they just let Spurs see what they could do, which was usually diagonally balls 50 and 60 yards looking for Son and Kane and hoping Mora could pick up something. Midfielders getting bypassed and hit them on the break. And their fullbacks are off.
I mean, apparently they only just scraped through Burnley at the weekend, during midweek as well.
Yeah.
It was a lucky goal.
For me, they might play into United's hands by United saying, right, we want to be solid here after what happened last weekend. We want to be solid. Let Spurs come on us and we'll hit them. Because United have got the pace to hold.
Oh, they have, yeah.
You know what I mean? But I think if Spurs are brave, and what I mean by that is do what Liverpool done. Play high up the pitch, but play through it. Don't let your final ball be won from 40 yards from goal. Your final ball has to be from 20 yards from goal.
Yeah.
And you will hurt them because I think Kane has got the movement if you get him in that situation. You know, we know this.
Yeah.
Son most definitely has. Lucas Moura has. You know, their fullbacks can get forward and they're good going forward. They're just awful going back. It's an intriguing one.
It's going to be a great watch.
Is there halfway on Saturday?
It's a tea time kickoff.
So, yeah, I'll come out of Anfield and I'm going to find a pub to watch that in.
Yeah, straight after us.
It's an intriguing one, so we'll have to wait and see. But you know, all the stuff going around them, like the amount of shit I've read this week about Manchester United is just unfucking believable. Like literally everyone and their mother is telling you that this person's being linked, that person's being linked. You know, there's genuine journalists out there basically going on as if they're fucking sitting in United's dressing room and asking the lads, what's going on here, lads? Oh yeah, hold on, I tweet that. Like, haven't a fucking clue what's going on. Do you know what I mean? But it's one of those. Anything else before we go, Kev?
No, mate, you're going to want to go and get some 40 winks before your early jaunt.
I have to go and get a little bit of sleep. I'm going to be honest. That's very, very true. looking forward to the weekend. There's a few people being on to us with regards to having a drink. If we get to you, we will absolutely get to you. The best thing to do is contact us, one of us, in some way tomorrow because, like I said, the best plans usually go to shit, don't they?
Yeah.
So I know only... the only plan is to get to the airport, have a few points, get on the plane, arrive in Liverpool and see how we go. Let me see. Jonathan. Come on, Jonathan. Now you have more respect for me than that. Gav, only 4 hours sleep tonight than on the beers at the AM. You'll be in a state come kickoff. Don't be that guy. Jonathan, I genuinely could stay up and just literally wait for me taxi at 4 o'clock and then go. And I'll be fine. Absolutely fine.
That's a good thing, actually, Chris. Chris has released another pod today for the LFC Women's Show. And they're flying it. They're doing really well. It's a really good pod on there. Just click onto the website and click into the link and have a good watch of that.
Yeah, really good.
Share it as well. Chris doing some cracking work on that. And the thing is, with the division that the women are in, they have to win it to get promoted. Second isn't good enough. So every game is important. And at this point in the season, they're doing really well.
Yeah, they are. They're doing well. And Chris does work hard on this women's show. And he's some great. The three guests he have from him give that time. And fair play to him for that as well. And the show's been really good. If you go on to our YouTube channel, you will see it there. It was released earlier on today. And, you know, a lot of people, like, let's be honest, don't watch women's football. But it's actually very interesting as to where Liverpool are right now as a women's side. The division they're in, the way they've brought in players, the way they've brought in managers, a new manager, a new style of play, what they're trying to do, and they're trying to be more out there as a a standalone football side rather than just being, oh, that's the women's Liverpool team. They're trying to get their own identity, and I think that's important. So,
and in fairness, with the way the Premier League is being branded now, the women's the WSL in the Premier League in England,
it's getting onto a lot
of Sky free-to-air Sky games. BBC are picking games up. It's going to get bigger.
And it's massive for Liverpool to not be left behind in that. You don't want to rock into this in 3 years' time and the clubs in that league have had 3 years to get their money in and set themselves up. You want to be into that. So they really want to get up this year and be on, you know, get on a par with these clubs and have the same foundations at these clubs and the same appeal as these clubs. Because Liverpool is a massive name. But like there's teams in that league that just players are just drawn to, you know, the sort of way. So it's one of those.
Arsenal and Chelsea are the standouts. They've been
absolutely, and Arsenal have been for years and years in women's football. Abo asked, where are we in the ground? We're in the cup. We're in the cup tomorrow. Back at the cup tomorrow. Gav's last chances. Have a great day. We will. It's not a day trip. We're staying overnight. I don't do day trips. Fuck that. But we're staying overnight. We're back Sunday night. But we will have a good time. But as I said, if anyone's around Liverpool, get in contact with us some way tomorrow around probably 10 o'clock in the morning, and we let you know where we are. We're going to try to do our best to meet anyone that fancies a point. And as I said, before or after the game, we don't know what we're at, but if we're at anything, we'll let you know. Red Steve, look, he's looking mad here. Remember your vaccine certificate, Gav. I have it all ready, but of everything. And Andy was laughing at me earlier going, what, you printed these out? I print everything.
Dead right.
I am horrendous for keeping my phone charged. Horrendous at it. Like, it'd be just my luck to rock up at Dublin Airport and look down, my phone's gone dead. And I can't charge the fucking thing. So I don't have no paperwork. So I always keep everything on my phone and I keep everything printed as well. So it's one of those.
That's it. Check out the baseball tonight.
Check out the baseball. Check out Sienna's steps. This time next week, she will be in America getting her treatment, just to let people know that. She's less than 4,000 away from her target now. That will be met. There's no doubt about that because it's some of the fundraising events they have coming up in the next couple of weeks. But if anyone's there controlling a few quid and get her over that 120 grand and make things a little bit more comfortable again for them, that's absolutely bang on and go and do that. The new channel coming next month, the link is in the description. People have told me it wasn't working. I've checked and double fucking checked it.
Yeah, it's working. It is working.
Right? It's in there. I think there's about 35 subscribers, but we genuinely don't care how many subscribers we have. We're doing this from probably the end of next month, and we're just going to have a great laugh talking all sorts of madness to do with football. So make sure you go and check that out. If you are watching this, leave a comment. Someone told me the other day, leaving a comment is very good for your channel. How the fuck? I don't know. But if you leave you're in the live chat, but if you're in the comments, go in afterwards, let us know what you thought of the show. Let us know what you'd like to see us talk about on this show or any other show, or just say random stuff, start up a conversation, whatever you might do that. And if you're listening to it on audio and when it gets available for download, make sure to leave a review wherever you get your podcast. That helps as well. Right. Jonathan asks, what's the score going to be tomorrow? That's not it. There you go. What's the score going to be tomorrow? Kev, Liverpool v Brighton. Score prediction, 3-0. Please. 3-0.
3-0.
I think
it'll be a cracking game. It'll be a really good game. They're a good side, but they have players coming back and they're missing a couple of key players as well. There's some good wing backs that'll cause us problems in Lamptey and Cucurella. I think the big unit, Dan Byrne.
Oh, yeah.
But he hasn't really been playing much. And
he was playing like left centre back, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was playing left of a three or left back in a four. But I think Cucurella is a really, really good signing. He's a shrewd signing.
Yeah,
I watched him a lot last year, and in the Olympics for Spain, he was very good. Lamptey just coming back from injury. Lallana in the six in the last few games.
The good midfielder back. What's his name?
I know you're on about. Basuma. Yeah, he played. I think he played an hour or played half an hour midweek, so he might be available. The thing is, Brighton were always one striker away from being a decent side. And your man plays up front for it. I mean, they had a really good start to the season.
Mopay,
yeah, he had a really good start. He had a really good three or four games. Then he went off a cliff. His form has gone down the toilet a bit. But they're still hard to beat, and they still press high. And it'll be a harder game than last week.
Yeah.
Okay. Genuinely. And that's not taking a pot shot at United, genuinely, I think our next two league games are definitely harder than what we had at Old Trafford.
Yeah, we've Brighton at home, and then we have
Brighton at home and West Ham.
West Ham away before another international break. Yeah. But anyway, you're going 3-0. Chris Black's gone 4-0. Gav Lascan has 6-1. Tom Boland has 5-0. Derek Room has 5-0 as well. Bit of talk about Basuma there. Came on second half midweek. Let me see. Avo says cheers to Gav. Kev and Gav for a Friday night show. Much appreciated. No. Yeah, we appreciate you being here with us.
Yeah, we do. Love it.
If there was 40 is here, we'd still be talking. It doesn't bother us. Gary Harrington, 4-0. Cyber Sims has 3-1. I'm going to go 3-1 Liverpool. I think Brighton will have a goal.
Yeah.
And I think they've a decent goal threat. Despite, I know what you're saying, but they've a decent goal threat. They've those sort of players that can kind of get in around Liverpool at times and be a bit awkward for
them. Lively on the press.
Yeah,
they're lively exactly. They're organised. They're organised on the press, which is unlike what we faced last week. They have an organised press. Mm. Once you get through it, then you can cause them problems. But
yeah,
they've proved last season that there's no fear.
Yeah. I know. I was going to say something, but I'm not going to say it because I'll jinx it. And I'm definitely not jinxing it, right? So Naby Lad looks to be back. That's true. Thiago's very close. And the squad's
maybe on the bench, hopefully.
Yeah, the squad's starting to come back together again, which is good stuff. Anyway, that has been the Sports Unplugged for this Friday night. Thanks a million for joining us. These are all very, very good. Just to let you know, the lads are on tomorrow, 2 o'clock pre-match show. I think that's Chris and Conroy on tomorrow from 2 o'clock. The Red Sea lads will be on at 5:15 with the post-match stuff. And I haven't a clue what's going on Sunday night, kids.
Keith is minding the house.
Keith is minding the house, so it'll all turn out fine because Keith's deadly at what he does. That has been it. Thanks for watching. Over and out. Sports Social Podcast Network.